welcome to the latest episode of Missing Figures, stories of power, perseverance, and possibility that should be common knowledge. I am one of the hosts, Cynthia Wright, and today we are talking about Octavia Butler, which is someone I'm very excited to talk about just because I'm a geek. If you were to ask me some of my descriptors that kind of tie into this episode, I would say that they would be that I'm a writer, I'm also a sci-fi and fantasy fan or buff, and I will say that, and one of, it's kind of sad, but I was bullied as a young kid.
Oh gosh, yeah, I bet a lot of people have that on the list. I'm Sherry Renard, Cynthia's co-host. Very excited to talk about Octavia Butler today, because I am also a writer, science fiction, and fantasy fan. This is going to be awesome, I think. How do you consume your sci-fi? Just out of curiosity, I know I have mine weighs heavily towards television and movies, because sometimes the books are above me. Then I'll go back and read the book.
Oh, really? For me, actually, I love, I'm the same, like sci-fi and TV. But I would say that I'm actually a fan of reading. I mean, I'm a voracious reader. Like my mom, just a quite quick side tangent, but my mom was huge on me and my brother reading as children. And like before, so she made us read everything. Like, you know, H.G. Wells and like Mary Shelley. Like we read, like she kind of made us read like the classics. So by the time I was entered into those I guess, during those grades or when I was in those English classes, like I would have already have read most of the books that they offered, because my mom was like, you need to be ahead of this stuff, which I guess in a way she was smart. Like I didn't realize what she was kind of preparing me for, you know?
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
It's interesting. I'm wondering now, because our mothers would have been similar generations, because my mother made me do like worksheets, handwriting worksheets, and speed reading. So she made like an index card and cut, it had a hole, a square cut in it. And, you know, you just, it highlights one word as you move it along sentences. Yeah. I'm just wondering. that same school of thought, getting them reading early. My mother was getting reading fast and early.
Yeah. My mom was definitely big. I read early. I was writing early. And everything like that, but she was just like, you need to read, like, know these classics, know how to like talk about them, book reports, like all this stuff. Like she was like serious.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, this is why Octavia Butler was kind of like us, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, she was born in 1947 in Pasadena, California, and her father died when she was 7. But it sounds like her mother was like our mothers. Yeah. Her mother worked as a cleaning lady at different houses and basically brought home, you know, thrown out school supplies for, you know, Octavia to have stuff that was extra. And like you mentioned, unfortunately, she was bullied. She apparently was very tall for her age. And I looked it up. She was 6 feet tall. So I don't know when she hit.
But, you know, like for girls, like especially in school, like, you know, you're like trailing like 5 feet for like the longest time. And then.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I was considered tall for like my elementary school. But so I remember like feeling like, and then you're just kind of still going through that. You're starting to hit that awkward phase and you don't want to draw attention to yourself. So I can just imagine being 6 feet. And having that. And then she was also, something else I read, that she was also undiagnosed dyslexic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you think back then, you know, here you love to read and you have dyslexia and it's not diagnosed, so.
Can you imagine, the work that she had to put in, though? The fact that, like, you know,
no
she
idea.
Was doing all this? Like, because my aunt, she's dyslexic. And I know, like, talking to her and, like, as an adult, she's told me more about her struggles with it. And, like, how she doesn't like to write things down and things like that, because she just still has, like, that fear. Because I think she was bullied for it as a kid, because she grew up in, like, you know, the 60s and the 70s, you know. So you imagine, like, this is your vocation is writing, and you suffer from this, but you don't know what it is.
don't know what it is, and half the methodologies that we use now to manage it didn't exist, probably. Mm. I'm guessing they didn't exist.
I mean, if they did exist, they weren't probably hitting the Black community.
No, exactly. But the thing is, she took refuge in the library. Mm-hmm. That's where she went to get away from the bullies. So she was in there and, you know, she was obviously plugging away whatever way she could. Maybe there was less pressure if you are reading to yourself quietly rather than being up in front of a class or in the middle of something. But that was her refuge from all the stuff she was getting bullied for. So she did it. And what I think is cool is she apparently decided to be a writer when she was 10 years old.
No, I mean, I think that's so, to know that that's something you want to do. Because I was like, if I was thinking about that reading, when I was reading about her, I was sitting there like, I couldn't tell you what I wanted to be when I was 10.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I was 10. But I'd forgotten that there was some young authors conference when I was in elementary school, and I got selected to go to the young authors conference for my poetry. Well, yeah, but I completely, and it was one of the highlights of being in elementary school for me, because I remember the author, Peggy Parrish, the author of the Amelia Bedelia books.
Yes.
Autographed my book. And that was just amazing. But I never stopped writing, but I forgot about my passion for writing. I think a lot of us forget. I think we get some, if we're lucky, if life isn't as hard as it can be, you get a spark of what your passion is younger. If the resources are there, you got to have free time, something. I think people touch on their passion. It's whether you're allowed to explore it or not and delve into it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I forgot about mine. I did it for work, but I never did it for fun until later in life. I actually came back to that memory that I did it for fun at one point. So I think it's amazing that she did it at 10. She just decided.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think to have, I always applaud, or I'm always just so like in awe of people that have knew since at a young age. Because like you, I used to do a lot of writing as a kid. Like I loved it. Like I mentioned earlier, for my descriptors, I was bullied. So I spent a lot of time reading and I spent a lot of time building my own worlds and feeling like safe, because I didn't really feel safe a lot growing up as a kid, like in my house and outside of my house for different reasons. But and just I didn't feel like I could express myself and be me. And then when I was reading and I was writing stuff, like I would be able to be kind of like feel in control of that in some kind of way.
How often did you guys have to move? Because you mentioned before in other episodes that you know, a daughter of an army officer.
Not that much. I mean, mostly, I think my dad would have moved more, but my mom and my brother didn't really like it, because one of the most endearing attributes he's ever said about me was that I'm an adventurer. Like, I have an adventurer spirit about me. Yeah. So, like, he knew he could put me anywhere, and I would I'd adapt, and I would find my way. And he said he didn't get that same feeling from my brother. And my mom wasn't like that. But, I think we moved maybe like, I don't know, 7-8 times, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. You don't think so, but it's a lot.
Yeah, I guess so. I wish I would have loved to just kept moving, but, you know, you got to settle sometimes. But, but I think that, in a way, helped me in a way, that the fact that I had my reading and my writing to fall back onto, because then I could still kind of have something that's mine, even while I'm navigating something that's new
around me. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think that's where she found, I found this fascinating about her. I mean, we have this quote that I pulled out. It's, writing is one of the few professions in which you can psychoanalyze yourself, get rid of hostilities and frustrations in public, and get paid for it. And it looks like her approach to writing was just like you said. It was something for her, but her approach, she's supposed to be she is the godmother of Afrofuturism. And her writing was very much about creating a different and better world, especially around racism, gender, slavery, and and even politics. So I think she found refuge in writing, you know, okay, the outside world's not, it's not holding up. But I can make it better on a page. And I think writers sometimes miss that that's their power. Even casual writers, that's the power of the page, is that you can put something different down. Actually, will you indulge me? Because I got so into Octavia this time, I ordered another one of her books that I haven't read. Mm-hmm. But crazy, it's back on the bestseller list. I'll see if you can guess why. I'm just going to read this excerpt. I have read that the period of upheaval that journalists have begun to refer to as the apocalypse, or more commonly, more bitterly, the pox, lasted from 2015 through 2030.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wait, there's chills coming. A decade and a half of chaos. This is untrue. The pox has been around a much longer torment. It began well before 2015. Perhaps even before the turn of the millennium. It has not ended. I have also read that the pox was caused by accidentally coinciding climactic, economic, and sociological crises. It would be more honest to say that the pox was caused by our own refusal to deal with the obvious problems around those areas. We caused the problems. Then we sat and watched as they grew into crises. I have heard people deny this, but I was born in 1970. By the way, I was born in 1970. I have seen enough to know that it is true. I have watched education become more a privilege of the rich than the basic necessity it must be if civilized society is to survive. I have watched as convenience, profit, and inertia excused greater and more dangerous environmental degradation. I have watched poverty, hunger, and disease become inevitable for more and more people. Overall, the pox has had the effect of an installment plan, World War III.
I know. Oh my God, that's so intense. That's so intense.
That's intense. This book is back on the bestseller list, and it was written. Take a guess when this was written.
Oh gosh, 1975.
Not as far back as that, but 1993.
Oh, crap. Oh, I'm bad with dates. Well, yeah, it wouldn't make sense because of how old she is. Never mind. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, 1993, but still.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a lot going on around in the world in 1993. I mean, I was really young, so I probably don't understand the full breadth of it. But, I mean, it's still very much...
It's relevant. Relevant. Yeah, today. It could be today, right? And yeah. And even the dates line up.
I know, it does. It's kind of scary.
Yes, the dates line up. And it just shows there's cycles. It shows that we're still dealing with the same old crap. It's also a warning. You know, if you thought about, you know, the environmental crisis, she's talking about climate change. Again, as we tape this, California's burning. People are coming out of hurricanes that were in the last 3 weeks.
Earthquakes in New Jersey.
Earthquakes in New Jersey.
It's a lot. I mean, I feel like right now, it's definitely, it's like we're definitely at the crux of something. And I just hope that the fallout from this is more positive than it is negative, because it's just been relentless. Just about, even if you think about just the natural... the natural stuff that's happening in the world when it comes to like weather and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But if you just look at the times that we are in now, just like the civil, like we've talked about this before, the civil mm-hmm. unrest, you know, the election and how people are going to react to it.
It's all COVID. There. It's just, I always say every age has its trials. And I think we're living through, hopefully, our trial. this is it. Although today, you know,
is 9/11 that we're recording this.
Yeah, so. I know. That's why I'm actually off today, because of my office is primarily New York based.
So, yes.
But I have a slight gripe with this. Which I get. Like, you know, I was like in college when 9/11 happened. I lived in the DC DMV area. So things got shut down so quickly, you know,
yeah.
because I'm not that, I lived in Maryland, but we're not that far from DC where I live in Maryland. And like, it was like, we were on curfew. I remember driving, seeing my best friend in Virginia and had to drive by the Pentagon and seeing the big hole in it. And, you know, so I remember that. And it's like, we get off on this date. We've always had it at my job off on this date, but we didn't get Juneteenth until this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's
but that's another story. I know it's like, it's not apples and oranges, and I'm not saying that.
No, not at all. I know. So many things are going on. And of course we're doing a lot of research for this, which is part of my passion around this is the deep dive. You know, I would do that whether I was going to talk about it later or not. And I just listened because of the anniversary of the March on Washington, listened to, it wasn't a podcast, it was a video of Dr. Clarence B. Jones, who helped write, he co-authored and drafted a lot of Martin Luther King's speeches. Mm-hmm. But he definitely, he did the I Have a Dream speech, and that's why he was speaking about it. And he mentioned the Victor Hugo quote that no army or, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but no army is as strong or as forceful as an idea whose time has come.
Yes.
And he was talking about it in the context of the protest and, you know, I'm thinking of the Juneteenth thing, you know, all the reflection, you know, even our economic system, our health system, all these things that people are out in the street screaming about now. And it may have aligned now with whose time has come. And he said, you know, racism time has come. It's done. It should be done. The fact that it's wrong is an idea whose time has come.
I know it has come. And in a way, like, I'm so glad that if anything, that us having been forced to slow down and really look at how things are going is like, that is what's, at least that's what's happening now. Like, people cannot say like, well, I didn't know, I didn't see, like, you chose not to, because you had the ability to not see it because it didn't directly impact you, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I like that, you know, in the sense that that is something that is coming to light, but it's also sort of similar, I wish like Octavia, like people like Octavia Butler, like what would they have said, you know, about what's going on right now, because she was writing about things.
She was. And that's, she had the approach of, you know, what could be a better world? You know, what are the real, this book that I quoted from, by the way, is The Parables of the Talents. And it is about the rise of a fundamentalist, you know, very authoritarian type of leader, you know, based on, you know, greed, just simple as that. And pitting people against each other for individual benefit. I mentioned before that I lived in, you know, I've lived in a lot of countries. I've lived in 12 countries. A lot of them had their heyday or their time of prominence in the world, and suffered decline. And unfortunately, I've seen a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing here in those countries. I've seen it happen. Rwanda is the one that I always point to. The pitting people against each other, neighbor against neighbor, the lies, that sort of thing. The making you fearful and putting people in a frenzy, really, about stuff.
So you're just reactionary. You can't think it through. You're just reacting to what's going on around you because you're in such a, like, you're like hyper aware, hyper focused, and you're not able to process.
It's fear. Yes. It's tapping into a primal fear, that we have to survive. But it's a false fear that's generated for somebody else's benefit. I always remind you, all these people that are telling you stuff can get on a private plane and go live somewhere nice and cozy.
Oh, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you look at what's happening in our country now, just anywhere, like all these people that, like the dictators, or like, if you want to say even Trump, like however you want to classify him. But it's like, if anything were to really go down, you think that he's going to be down with the people? God. No, he's not. No. We know
no.
he's
not.
That's what I'm saying. They can they all go somewhere else. Yeah, the countries I've lived in, they go shopping in Paris, they get their healthcare in Switzerland, they go to the Mayo Clinic. They have friends that put them in lovely houses here and there if they have to escape and there's unrest. Mm-hmm. You look at Assad, his wife had whole, cancer treatment and all sorts of stuff.
I know.
And she, she got to go to the private showings in Paris still while her people are being bombed out and on that sort of thing. And I've seen it over and over in a lot of countries. You don't want, I say you never want to live in a country where a small group of people have everything to lose and a large group of people have nothing to lose.
It's so crazy. Like that world, like that echelon of people, cause it's like that lack of humanity. I don't think I would ever, like, I guess losing that touch with that humanity and just being like, whatever happens, happens. It's not me. It's like, it's never going to be me. So I'm not concerned. Like, I don't understand how you can exist and call yourself a human being in this world and just be like so apathetic.
But I think the other underlying decision or thought that goes along with that is that nothing bad will ever happen to me or anybody that I care about. So it's not just, I don't care about you. It's also, they're assuming nothing. None of those things will happen to me. So,
Yeah.
Why do I need to care at all?
But I find, but I know. And I think that's, I don't know. I just find that, I don't understand that way of thinking or being. So, because I'm just not wired that way. But I will have to say what one thing that I really liked, and I find that Octavia Butler's, like, her approach to how she wrote about these things, like, mm-hmm. the fact that she used, like, sci-fi and fantasy to kind of have, like, these underlying conversations, I found that really smart. Because I feel like a lot, if she just wrote it, like, straight up, like, a drama took place in today's society, I don't think she would have got the same level of reaction from people. I almost find, like, in a way that it may kind of gotten like a different result. I find in a way that that she went in this way of like saying this world, but ideally if you look at it and you think critically and like you can see the parallels in what she was trying to say. And I find that's
absolutely.
Like I found that very smart way and an engaging way to be, because not only are you still getting your message out there, but it's sort of like, but people can't, because I feel like a lot of people, like the haters and people that want to criticize things, they're going to be like, well, technically, that's not how it really happened here.
Yeah,
That's not true. That's not based on fact, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And she's sensationalizing. Like, I felt like people would have come for her if it was more, if mm-hmm. it took place in something that you could say, this is how it is in 1993, Pasadena, California. But the fact that it was like this world and she can basically just depict it however she wants to, but it's clearly based in some sort of sense of reality of like things that are happening, like whether it's like relations mm-hmm. between people, relations between people in the government or whatever, I find that that at least gets people thinking about it. And they say like, absolutely. Okay, I see it here, but I can also see it in my real life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're exactly right. It's really smart. It's clever. Not everybody can pull it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, her imagination and intelligence just has to be off the charts to the stuff that she imagined. And to get to the point, and to be still relevant, today.
Mm-hmm.
So that you think you're reading something that's current. And so I think, I it's funny because I saw a story about why she decided it was a bad science fiction TV film. I can't remember the name of it. She said she stayed up late and it was on television. And she just thought, I could do this better. And I think that's one of the things that attracted her about the genre. But I think you're right. I've been thinking about this a lot too. We mentioned protesting and all sorts of things that are going on where people are trying to make their voices heard. But I've been thinking about this and talking with other people. does that have to be the way? Can you use your way in, like she did with these books? She used her talents to try and do something and move something, opinion, and expand minds. Does it have to be the struggle? Is there other ways to move society forward using your talents in a way that you want? Because there are, sometimes people think there's only a handful, and if it doesn't appeal to you to take to the streets and fight with people, you know, put yourself out there in that way. And you know, I if you can think of five others, they're off the top of my head, it seems like a limited list, but people don't realize that they have the power maybe to do something in another way. Writing a novel takes time, granted. And she worked her butt off.
Yes, she did.
She worked her butt off to make it. But ultimately, she achieved the goal, I think, of presenting a world that reflected on the issues of the day that are still going on, and specifically centering it around African-American women. Her protagonists were always African-American women. And
they're still not getting... Yeah. Still not the focus.
And that's another thing that boggles my mind with anything when it comes to like any endeavor. I was going to say any creative endeavor, but I'm just going to say any endeavor. But that the fact that like how much of the population is made up of men and women, you know, why wouldn't we want, like, I found it great that she put a black protagonist, a black female protagonist in for her writing. That, I mean, why not? Like, why not? We consume sci-fi and fantasy. And
oh my goodness.
And it's like, why not? But it's like, people get so up in arms about certain things. Like, it drives me freaking bananas it just drives me crazy because of like people just feeling like, well, it's always been this way, so why does it have to change? But I'm like, why doesn't it? Like society in itself changes. We all change. Yeah. So like, why couldn't that be reflective in what we're doing here? Because I just remember, I'm a sci-fi geek and nerd. I love Star Wars, right? So
okay, yeah, that was my big one.
I like Star Wars and I like video games, and it's like the amount of like fights I've had to have, and at the point I'm just like, you know what, you just want to be, you know, misogynistic, but you don't want to say that's what you are, but that's what it is if you look at the definition what you're doing. But it's like a lot of people just feel like, well, I don't understand why that has to be that way. I don't understand why it needs to be a female character. I don't understand why it needs to, why a woman in a video game, like who's going to play a woman as a lead character in a video game? But I'm like, well, we've been playing as male characters for years, and why not? And I'm sure, and it's like, I don't get the big deal. And then with the Star Wars thing, I personally didn't like the new Star Wars series, but it was because of the storytelling, not because the fact that the lead was a female or woman.
Right. But unfortunately, it gets blamed on that it centered around a female character. And that's what I was going to say, is a lot of the approach to anything, and you said any endeavor, it's true, is if it's outside of a white male cisgender view, that's the default for some reason. So we're all supposed to be able to see our humanity and such reflected in these characters without question. And it's not considered niche. Even though it's not, you know, reflective of me, but any other thing is considered niche. But really, if it's a good story, it taps into common humanity, and you should be able to see yourself there, you know, regardless of who is playing it out. Sci-fi has creatures from other planets that don't even exist, don't even take human form. That's the beauty of it. Is that
right?
But how do those characters come across? How are you identifying with a Klingon or a whatever? Take your pick, you know, energy, whatever it is. How is it that you can tap into that? But if it's somebody that you could actually know in person, or represents a group of people that you know in person, why is it you can't understand that their story could be your story? It's just in a different shape.
Exactly.
That's what I love about sci-fi. I just love it.
But I like the diversity in the worlds and everything like that. But I was like, I've had so many like strongly worded conversations with people because of the fact that people were like, well, the doctor, Doctor Who, like she's a woman. And it's like, well, I would have probably take to her more being an alien than a woman. And I'm sitting there like, what? It's like, so you're okay with Doctor Who not even being like a human being, but a woman? Right. That's not right. Okay.
Yes.
But it's like, totally like the conditioning of people and what they can deem as like right and proper in the world. I'm like, this stuff is all made up. That's what I say.
It's completely made up.
Like I get to the bottom line, I'm like, guys, this is all made up. This is not based in reality. Yeah, there's some underlying themes that you can kind of tie to the reality, but it's world building, it's characters, it's come on.
But even by their own rules, Cynthia, a Time Lord, if he regenerates, you know, every cycle, then it should be any random person.
Exactly. That's my whole
thing. And so some of them could be women, but especially if they're more of the population, right, by their own rules, by the rules of the thing, you know.
I got into it about that. And I'm like, that's basically what I said. And they were saying, like, but he always regenerated as a woman. But I'm like, as a man. And I'm sitting there like, well, not every time, apparently.
Statistically.
it's like, oh my God, like misogynistic. And just like, it just drives me crazy because it's like, this is an area where it should just be like free reign, right?
Because it's like, completely.
And it's like, world should be diverse. It shouldn't necessarily be tied to like how we may unnecessarily so have to feel like we're made to kind of be in this box in like our day to day, you know, in real time.
Well, that's why we introduce ourselves the way we do, because we're many things. You should have added gamer to the list as well, by the way.
Oh yeah,
because it's true. Sci-fi,
the sci-fi world is wrapped up in gaming as well. But that's it. That's where an ideal future you would hope. I mean, there's all sorts of genres of sci-fi with the post-apocalyptic and dystopian, but it's still all the people on the Earth or all the people left on Mars and all whatever.
And it drives me nuts. But sort of like, but if you look at, and I know, just to bring it back to Octavia real quick, but if you look at the people that were her contemporaries of the time, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. No, so, come on.
But do
you
think they got that type of flack or like that type of pushback about anything? Because I'm sure people have brought up like, why does it always have to be a black female protagonist in your stuff? You know?
Yeah,
so it's like,
true.
Do you think, like, you know, I know we listed out some people, like there's Douglas.
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's Arthur C. Clarke, who did, 2001 Space Odyssey. I put Stephen King in there because it's horror. I don't know.
But look at Stephen King. Like
Phillips K. Dick.
Look at his work. Yeah. I love Scanner Darkly, though.
Scanner Darkly.
I love the Man in the High Castle as well.
High Castle, alternate universe.
I love all history, so I geek out to
That type of stuff. I mean, really good. Really good stuff.
And then Ira Levin did the Stepford Wives. So, I mean, those were her contemporaries, and they're better known. Douglas Adams, who did Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sure she got pushback, but she just trudged on. I mean, I talked about her wanting to be a writer from 10. So she begged for a Remington typewriter. I mean, I don't know how much they would have cost at the time on a maid's salary.
Wow.
Begged for it. And she apparently typed two finger.
Oh, so that's how she got these books out. Yeah, exactly. I think I'm
close to two fingers still, or the thumbs. And then she asked for a teacher to help her submit to a magazine. She went to classes. She used to get up. So you asked, how do you fit this in? A lot of times people want to write and they don't get. They say, I don't have the time for it. So she basically took odd jobs, anything that paid, to help support her mother and her grandmother who raised her. And she got up at 2:30 in the morning. 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, she wrote. And then she took those jobs. And she didn't want to take anything more challenging because she wanted to always have time to write. And then she did writer's workshops. And one of her pieces got selected by her teacher to go into an anthology. And of course, like you've had this experience, when you get any you know, you've entered scripts into competitions and fellowships.
You think you've made it. Mm-hmm. When you get any little taste of success, mm-hmm. I haven't won anything. I'll
get through like a quarterfinal or semi and think, oh yeah, you made it. Well, she thought she made it when she did that anthology. And she spent 5 years after that getting rejections. And they said it took her to 1978 before she stopped, and she stopped with the odd jobs and was able to work as a full-time writer. So she plugged away.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that work out to? Game.
I feel like a lot of people, and I feel like in our culture, and I get wrapped up in this too, like of the overnight success, but we always forget. We see the success, but we don't think about everything that came mm-hmm. into that.
Because it's glorified. There was some documentary on that years ago, and apparently it's about 7 years is the average, but it's much longer for people that we know that are quite famous. It's like you said, they get in their moment of glory. It feels like it was because all everybody's talking about, and they did nothing beforehand to get there. Mm-hmm. But really, there was a lot of work put in beforehand, and she. That's what she did. Low-paying jobs, so she had the flexibility to wake up at 2 in the morning to write. So, I mean, that's just amazing to me. But, I mean, you know, as a writer, that's kind of what you have to put in.
Yeah, you do. You definitely have to put in the time and the effort. And I think the rejection actually helps with your developing that skin. Because I feel like I definitely now... I get kind of like, you always feel a little bit bummed, but then I'm like, moving on. Cause you know, it's just like kind of the name of the game and not everybody's going to like your stuff. And I think a lot of people that are writers, I've seen some people lose their mind over certain things. And I'm like, someone just didn't really like your stuff. You know, not everybody's going to like it. You know, you'll find your people eventually, but it's just not that person. So keep going.
But it's easier said than done, I think, because as you know, you put your heart into it.
It is, and it hurts. I'm not going to say it doesn't sting.
Yeah, it doesn't sting.
I'm never going to say that, but you kind of have to try to have perspective, because it's like, you know, if she just let the rejection, like the first one stop her, you know, she would have just, you know, we would never have had like Kindred. We wouldn't have had like all these like things that she wanted to like bring to the world, really.
Well, you know what we wouldn't have? I mean... Yes, the comic strips did exist at the same time. But Wakanda, you know, the way we saw it in the films that came out, gosh, it's 2018 now. Wakanda and Black Panther, you know, you can attribute that to Octavia Butler.
Of course.
That vision.
I mean, that, you know. It was just glorious because, you know, well, why some people ask, you know, why did Black people get so excited about it? One, it was just a plain good story.
Yeah.
It was a good movie, but it was also a place that had never been colonized or
suppressed.
And they weren't struggling.
They weren't struggling. It was untouched. It was about pure potential. Pure potential. And I have to think about it. Is there a place on this earth where Black or brown people are that has not been colonized or, you know,
all their riches taken from somebody else and then, you know, misused by, is there a place? So that was the joy, part of the joy of Black Panther. And it existed really, I think, in the mind's eye of the people who created it because of the writings of Octavia Butler.
And there are other things. Beyonce's Lemonade, apparently.
Oh,
all the artistic direction.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you, Sherry, with me and Lemonade. Oh, my God. So I was never a big Beyonce fan. Like, I liked her stuff.
I'm still not, but don't worry. I appreciate her.
Yeah, I appreciate her. I'm like, I'm not a big Beyonce fan. Like, I would not pay to go see her in concert. Like, I'm not that type of person.
Yeah.
But Lemonade dropped, and I was like, whoa. And I just watched the visual of it, and I loved just the visual. I had problems with the fact that why did someone, like, because, you know, Beyonce, like, you know, the Creole and the light skin and all that other type of stuff.
Yeah,
like, she was the one that had to bring something like this. And I was kind of like, part of me is like, I get it, but I don't, and I don't like it, but I appreciate the visual. There's like, I'm such, like, I have such polarizing thoughts sometimes.
You mean you're a human being? Yes. No, but that's why it may have tapped into that. I mean, fine, she's the messenger. If people are paying attention, that can only be good.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, it can only be good. And a lot of people adore her, and that's fine, and that's right. If it's important to you, if it's your thing, it's important. That's end of story. And but she was her artistic director. I think he's called Hilton Nayes. Mm-hmm. It was built around a vision from Octavia Butler. So she's inspiring people still.
You can definitely see it. And it's like, it's sort of like when you see it on screen and you can like, because that whole thing, like Lemonade, and I'll even touch on Black Panther. What I really liked about Black Panther is like Ryan Coogler did it. And mm-hmm. I really like his work. But I felt like this was the first time that you got to see a Black superhero movie that was like part of the Marvel universe, right? And it was unapologetically Black, you know? Right. For a Marvel movie, like, because you would not expect, if you looked at the current landscape, because you had, like, Iron Man, you had Captain America, you had Thor, you had Guardians of the Galaxy, you had, you know, the Avengers, and everything like that, and it's like, and then Black Panther came, and you're just like, are they going to do this? Because I remember seeing the preview of it, and it's just like him and Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace, but, because that messed me up, but seeing him in just in the freaking garage, and you just saw it, and you're just like, okay, so they're gonna do this, and then and it's like, well, how are they really gonna roll out this movie? Like, how's Hollywood gonna let this movie unfold, right?
Yeah.
And then when I saw it, like, I went opening night with me and my brother, we did like a midnight showing or something, and it was packed. It was like sold out. It was packed, and it was just like, on the screen, it was just amazing. Like, it was just like viscerally, it was just, you're just like, wow, you know, this world exists. Yeah. And then on the fact that they were untouched and they were uncolonized, but it was also the fact that they kept people out. Like, you know, it's like they were like, this is ours, you know,
it was.
Like, this is ours. And I felt complete like that was joy. So great to see.
It was, it was in so many ways. And I think that's what it tapped into, which I'm not sure if everybody realized I think you saw your full potential possibility up on screen, all in the vibrant color, in the stability, in the scientific advancement, how smart everybody was,
Women had peaceful existence.
Peaceful existence. Women were equal. It wasn't like, well, women are just this.
Yes.
And it's like, women were running things. And it's like, come on, you know, it was utopia.
It was. And the fact that they were going to save the world from, you know, this, what they have could save the world. It's just, in so many, so many, so many ways, it was just brilliant. It came from, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but the vision of that came from Octavia Butler.
Of course. You know, Stan Lee, if you give him credit, he was definitely like from where he came from, like,
yeah.
And the type of stories he could have put out, you know,
yeah,
he didn't necessarily toe that line, you know?
No.
But
I agree.
I did appreciate that they had a Black director and stuff like that, so.
Absolutely. And it paid off so well. I do hope that it has a way forward that honors, you know, I don't know how they're going to approach that, but maybe we'll have a whole episode about what ends up happening. I just hope it doesn't stop. I think the other thing, this also could be another episode, but I always thought it was nice too that, you know, little kids could dress up as Suri or Black Panther and all sorts of choices. There were many aspirational characters in there.
Mm-hmm. Again,
you know, if it's about possibility, knowing what you could be. But I wouldn't even mind any kid wanting to be Suri would be brilliant to me, because that's it. Is she's again, it's about her humanity and being somebody admirable. But it you know, we haven't been represented, so particularly for little Black girls, brilliant.
I know, but Black Panther, but it's like, it for what it stood for, it was like, it was huge, you know, just like on that global international scale, it was crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And it like was gangbusters, and it's like, you know what, I mean, all I can do is applaud, because it was like, yo, we did this.
Yes, did it this. Is, right.
If you know, or if you looked into any of her writings and her stories, you can definitely tell that she was part of the thinking about that. And then I know we also talked about that new Jordan Peele movie that's coming out too.
Yes. Antebellum.
I'm sure that's based off of Kindred, which is a time travel book. Really, really gut-wrenching, but interesting. I read it a while ago. I think it's Kerry Washington is playing the main character in Antebellum. But
yeah, I thought it was Janelle Monáe.
Oh, maybe. Oh, yeah. You're right. I'm getting.
It's okay.
I'm thinking they think she's somebody else doing the role, but
this is a woman getting pulled back and forth. In the Octavia Butler book, it was in the late '60s, and she was. I think the character was in California, and she kept getting ripped back and forth between Antebellum South and current day. And it was really gut-wrenching, because the place she was getting ripped back to was to do with her family's. She was descendant of the people she's going back to. And one of the things I read about her that was interesting was one of the things that inspired her to. They think that Kindred was inspired by a class that she took, and she said some student in this class, an African-American student. I can almost hear him saying it, was like, what was wrong with those slaves? Why didn't they just rise up and, you know, take over? I'm sure I would have done that. Why, you know, complain about their subservience. Mm-hmm. And apparently in a paper initially, and then I think it turned into the book Kindred, she decided to explore why there is a quiet strength in not rebelling, you know, for survival, about all the people you're protecting, you know, in back then, you know, you're discounting that rebelling meant that you could be sold off, or you could be, and removed from your family. You can't protect them anymore. That you could be sent away, or that your children could be sent away, or, all these considerations, the tough choices people would have to make. And why the choice to be quiet and go along with it was the smart, powerful, courageous choice, and that's what it was. Like our Bessie Coleman, some dude mouthing off, and her going, okay,
I'll show you.
Exactly. I know. You know. I love that when people.
Yeah. Are like, exactly. You want to know why they did that? I'll tell you.
But also, I feel like Kindred was like very much about showing like empathy. It was more about like showing like empathy, or like being empathetic, or whatever, however you want to say it. Because it's sort of like, it's easier to say like, well, why didn't you do this when you didn't have to go through it? You know,
if you didn't have to go through it,
right? And it's like, well, and it's like, I feel like, yeah, I didn't have to go through like segregation like my family did in the South. Like, I didn't have to go through it like really like hardcore like they did. But the stories and stuff that they told me, I mean, I could see, and I could see how they are now, and I could see how stuff like that has impacted them and how they saw themselves. Yep. But it's like, so I think there's like that level of empathy, and just for you to gloss over and just be like, well, I don't understand why they didn't do this. It's like, you can't really be so into that. I mean, I guess you can't use that as a, as an answer, or,
no.
I'm trying to think of the word. You can't just sweep over it so blindly, in a sense.
Yeah.
And I think that Kindred, what's so great about it is like, it kind of applies the fact that this person is time traveling, and you can kind of see, okay, back in the South, and back in present day, you can kind of say like, oh, okay, well, it's kind of one, and it's not necessarily as like pulled apart as you think that it is.
Right. You know,
there's still stuff right. that we're battling and going through today, like especially in the 60s, since that's where it was set. But it's like, that was present day. I mean, there's like a whole bunch of stuff that the Black community was still going through, and then just sort of just being yanked back and forth between time. And I think that helped establish, like, you know, it's not necessarily as clear cut as you would like it to be.
No, there's always nuance, and there's always hard choices to make. You know, hopefully, you know, most of our choices aren't life and death. And you can find a way to move forward with whatever you need to do. But I mean, a lot of the stuff, you know, that she's talking about, a lot of stuff that our parents went through or grandparents, the choice was between life or death, or the life or death of somebody else, or the livelihood of some, you know, somebody, or, you know, those choices are very hard to make.
It is.
It's just, we've got our current knowledge.
It is. And I think that's something like people don't take into account. Cause it's like, for me, I mean, I don't have kids, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm ever going to have kids. I don't know. But it's like, I don't have kids, but I feel like as someone like, but I also don't speak on things to, or give my opinion on things that don't necessarily impact me. Like people that are mothers, you know, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like I don't know,
yeah.
You know? So I probably would have seen it differently. Like that guy is sort of like, I would have been like, well, don't you have family? I would have just countered and be like, don't you have family that have gone through something similar?
Right, you're
like,
trying to argue with them. Yeah.
But then at the same time, I feel like a lot of people just want to believe what they believe, whether it's based in reality, but it's like based in their own reality, and they don't want you to disturb it, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely. That is for sure.
And that's why I think I liked about Kindred, the fact she took that and just been like, I'm going to move this and I'm going to turn it into something that I know, like where her safe place and where her, she felt the strongest. And she created something like Kindred just said, like, it's not as simple as you like to think that it is, dude.
Yeah, it wasn't at all. It's very nuanced what happens to her. Like I said, she brings this modern woman arriving in antebellum South and on a slave plantation, you know, you think I'm tough. I know who I am. There's no way they're doing this to me. And in ways, you know, that are horrible, she finds out that she's got to navigate it in a very, very nuanced
and
complicated way.
And it's very off. I mean, it's very just traumatizing. Cause you imagine if something like that were to really happen, people would lose their...
Oh my gosh.
What would we do? Because it's like...
I don't know.
I mean, sometimes, now that I have a little bit more... I think about when I went to Africa for the first time by myself. I was 19. And I was coming from San Francisco, California. Very kind of hippie-ish. Very free. I was, you know, before... helicopter parenting, there's like the free roaming kids. I was very independent. So the things that I encountered there could have got me into big trouble. I think it was not understanding is probably what, then in that ignorance helped me, I think. And I will say status too, being a diplomat's kid, which is what my father did after the military, probably saved my butt more than I knew. But I was being told, you know, where I could go, how to speak to men. I lived in a country, that was, the president was raised by Scottish missionaries and was very conservative. It was Malawi. He had very strict rules. Men, if their hair was too long, their hair could be shaved at or cut at the airport. Women had to only wear skirts, and the skirt had to cover your knees. And any man on the street could stop you and make you go on your knees just to confirm that your skirt was long enough.
Wow.
Even if you're doing sports, we had to wear a wrap around our running sports things. Men, no matter what social status they had, could tell any woman what to do. I had men tell me I should take lipstick off and all sorts of stuff. And you know, silly 19-year-old girl from California had some opinions about that that were shocking. I had police officers trying to get bribes from me, and I just argued. But I think if I hadn't had the, like I said, the status privilege, being an American, and maybe, you know, having somebody who backed me up, I, you know, other people would end up in jail for this stuff I did. So if I'd known that and didn't have those privileges, I probably would have navigated that in a different way and been more compromising about how I went about things.
You have such an interesting life, Sherry.
It's just weird.
I love it. I mean, I know there's pluses and minuses, but, you know, I'm always in for people that have lived atypical existences. So,
I mean, I just have to say this woman, though, I still wonder. I don't think her name is common knowledge. I think she's very highly respected in her genre. She was highly acclaimed. And I do say she did receive a lot of awards during the time that she wrote. And, mm-hmm. and that she, at least she got to enjoy that, that respect. She won the top science fiction awards. I think she won the Nebula and the Hugo twice. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think the last 3 years running, an African-American author, a female author for a series that she wrote, she has won. So that's some progress.
Yep.
But it's a very limited, underrepresented group of people writing science fiction in the way that she did.
You know what I find so interesting now that I'm kind of dialed into writer Twitter? A lot of them mostly are just screenwriters, but a lot of them do. They're in sci-fi and fantasy now, which I find very refreshing, actually.
Yeah, good. I love it. The more, I don't care what direction. I think I get really excited about near future sci-fi just because I like to see, to be able to connect what something turned into. Mm-hmm. But I think anything people can come up with, I just love. I think during quarantine, I've watched more science fiction than anything. I'm actually watching a German show now called Dark, which is time travel.
Ooh, I think I have that one, or I have it written down or something.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. And it started because I watched something called Counterpart, similar kind of thing. But you know, I don't care. It can be The Expanse. I think there's room for anything and everything in that. I'm very excited to see what people come up with. So there's a lot of room for people.
I know. I
mean,
I
to feel explore
like
this.
It's so untapped. And like I said, like you, there's the future. There's the near future. There's the alt history. Cause I'm like, I love alt history.
I love alt history. So oh my gosh.
I have
been loving Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, me too. I love Inglourious Basterds. I feel like it's one of my favorite Quentin Tarantino.
It is. It is mine. I love it.
I love all history. Anytime. I think it's brilliant. I get very excited about it. I could consume that all day long. But if I was a faster reader, I'd probably read more of it, but since there's so much available to watch, that tends to be my default. So I also think a lot of it's really beautiful. I can watch something just because it's beautiful, but
the Blade Runner that they redid,
the
later one, I just think it was visually, it was just spectacular.
It was visually stimulating. I get into that. I like cinematography too. Like, I'm such
My gosh, I could watch a movie just for that. Me so too. That's what stuck with me about it. But it's sci-fi still. Just
I just the imagination, because you have to really dig. Like, I did like a sci-fi script that I worked on, and it's like just the world building and just like the minutia of everything, and like why these people come together or they don't come together, what they look like how this world exists, and like it's just so amazing. And it sort of just shows like the untapped potential of like the human mind in a way. And
right.
I love just being able, and I mean, of course, hence this, the show and what we talk about, but I love that, you know, there's so many, it seems like more Black women are taking advantage of it and bringing things to life in that arena,
yes.
which I applaud, because it's like, we definitely need our voices there. I mean, more Black and brown voices there in general, but I always will do a special clap for Black women. So
yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I just think it's fertile ground. If you're anyway inclined, paper and pencil still exists, phones still exist to type out something, and they help lead to our future. I'd like to imagine a better future. It's hard now, but
yeah,
you know, I'm still hopeful. If we've done somebody, this Clarence B. Jones, civil rights, you know, activist and co-writer of script of speeches for Martin Luther King, said, you know, if Elon Musk can send, you know, a commercial space, you know, vehicle, you know, out into the world, and we can put rovers on Mars, we can figure out how to use some of this and imagine how to tackle some of the biggest things that still plague our world. Why? I mean, because it's ingenious what people are doing. Why not dedicate it? It helps everybody if we get rid of these plagues.
It does. You know? Like, we want, don't we all want that utopia? Come on. Come on, everybody.
Yeah.
Let's get out of each other's way.
I do.
I know I do. I would love
yesterday.
It.
Kind of tired.
Yes, just a little
kinda
bit.
Kind of tired.
But if you ever, if you're out in the world, there, if you are interested in writing, oh my gosh, there is an Octavia E. Butler Memorial Scholarship at her, at the Clarion West Writers Workshop, where she got her start. They dedicated it to her. There's lots of writer scholarships in her name. She's got over 15 acclaimed books. I'm sure there are more. There's an asteroid named after her.
This is amazing.
And then just last year, the Los Angeles Public Library they dedicated a maker space, so you can create anything in the spirit of the Octavia Lab. They've named it after her, probably where she did a lot of stuff. And I think Ava DuVernay is doing an adaptation of Dawn. But I mean, given you know, the way that television filming is going, I don't know when that would be out. But there's a lot of ways that you could get into Octavia Butler or share her story or just be inspired by her.
Yes, yes, yes. I agree. There's so much of her. And I know that she suffered from a lot of ill health and everything towards the end of her life. And,
she died young.
Yeah, she died young. So
58. She was 58 years old.
Yeah, she died very, very young. But I think she left like such a wealth of work and things that will really challenge you, really open your eyes to, if you're new to sci-fi and fantasy, way that open up your eyes to that, I guess, like forum. And show you that you like we do, us too, we all have a place in like those types of worlds in the world building, and you can definitely still see yourself as well as see things that are happening even now in these fantastical or in these like I guess in these like interesting worlds that she created throughout her stories or throughout all the books that she made. So I definitely say check out her stuff. Look into her more. She's just interesting. She was just the woman of that time and having to grow up, and like she came from like pretty much like a single parent household, and she was a world traveler. And there's just so many things about her that was just very, very interesting, and that she didn't let the no's stop her. And I think that's something that we should always just take forward with us, is like, we may get the no's, but if you are so adamant about what you're trying to do and put out there, you know, keep moving forward, keep doing it. You'll find your audience. You'll find what you're looking for. You know, people are willing and ready to hear or receive this type of stuff. You know, we just may not be given that same type of like entryway or knowledge because, you know, that's kind of something that has been that we've kind of been shut out of. But then there's people like her and others that are making have made headway. And we can definitely continue the path forward for sure.
Yes, that's it. She created a path and paths can take many directions. So the no just means there's another path for you. But keep going.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.
Yes, thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like it, please rate us. We always like that. Share it out with people that you feel would really love to hear our message. And if you have any missing figure that you would like for us to cover, we always are looking for interesting figures to know in history, United States or worldwide.
Absolutely. Even just to do the deep dive.
Yes, we always like to know and learn about interesting people or the missing figures in our world.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.